Hey all, welcome back to the Real Life Pharmacology Podcast. I'm your host, Pharmacist Eric Christensen. Thank you so much for listening today. As always, go check out reallifepharmacology.com. Simply subscribing by email will get you a top 200 study guide. It's a 31-page PDF. Great if you need a refresher out in practice. Great useful tool if you're taking pharmacology classes, board exams. Great tool for many clinicians, healthcare professionals to utilize and benefit from. So again, go take advantage of that, reallifepharmacology.com. One other note I wanted to mention, I get occasional mentions, can you do this podcast, can you do that podcast on a specific drug? Please go to reallifepharmacology.com, go under the podcast tab, and you should be able to search the specific drug you're looking for. I've also got them categorized. If you look at the right-hand sidebar, if you're viewing from a laptop computer, sometimes they don't pull into all the podcast platforms, but I've done hundreds of podcasts at this point. So definitely go check it out if you're thinking of a fairly common drug that's being used. Odds are likely I've already done that podcast. So again, you can find all those at reallifepharmacology.com. All right, the drug of the day today is isavuconazole. Brand name of this medication is Cresemba. And this drug is under the class of azole antifungals, but there definitely are some important differences with this agent that I think you definitely need to be aware of for sure. So first off, you may see the drug stated, or its salt form stated, instead of isavuconazole, you may see isavuconazonium sulfate as the actual drug. And that's the reason for that is it is a prodrug. So it's immediately cleaved into the active drug by plasma esterases, which active drug is considered isavuconazole. So kind of an interesting note there. The other important note with that I wanted to mention is if you see 372 milligram dose, 186 milligram dose, that's referring to the salt formulation, okay? Whereas that's equivalent to, so the salt formulation of 372 is equivalent to 200 milligrams of isavuconazole. Salt form of 186, that's equivalent to 100 milligrams of the active drug, isavuconazole. So definitely important, I think, to remember that prodrug formulation. There is IV and oral options. I think one important distinction from, let's say, a drug like voriconazole, which is used for similar indications, isavuconazole doesn't contain the cyclodextrin vehicle, SBECD. Okay, so long story short on this, this particular component can accumulate in renal impairment, and there has been some associations with kidney and liver toxicity. So with that said, if you've got somebody with significant renal impairment, this cyclodextrin vehicle can accumulate and potentially increase the risk of those things. So isavuconazole doesn't have this vehicle. Voriconazole does. So that's definitely one differentiating factor there. Mechanistically, isavuconazole being an azole antifungal, it inhibits the production of ergosterol. Remember, ergosterol is needed as really a building block of the cell membranes of fungi. And this mechanism, basically what's actually inhibited, the enzyme that's actually inhibited, is lanosterol 14-alpha demethylase. Okay, so that ultimately blocks the conversion of lanosterol to ergosterol. Let's talk a little bit about usage. So I mentioned isavuconazole being a potential alternative to voriconazole. So there's definitely some overlapping indications there. So invasive aspergillosis, potentially candidiasis off-label, and another invasive species, mucormycosis. Isavuconazole is going to be a potential alternative in that situation. Now, tying in the adverse effect profile, let's talk about this a little bit, because there's one maybe specific reason why you'd select isavuconazole over voriconazole or other azole antifungals. So first off, kind of generalized adverse effects, so GI upset, potential increase in LFTs, low potassium levels, infusion reactions. That's pretty rare, but obviously drop in blood pressure, chills, shortness of breath. That has been reported with isavuconazole. Uniquely, isavuconazole causes QT shortening. So most often when we think about drugs, we think of QT prolongation. Isavuconazole has been associated with QT shortening. So in a patient with QT prolongation risk factors, whether it be other medications or electrolyte imbalances or so on and so forth, this is a differentiating factor of isavuconazole, and I think an important one to note if you've got somebody with, you know, QT interval greater than, you know, 500, for example. Obviously, we're going to avoid or try to avoid any other agents that are going to prolong that further. So definitely an important distinction there. Along with that cyclodextrin vehicle that I mentioned before in why you may choose isavuconazole over voriconazole in certain indications there. Now, why is isavuconazole typically not used versus voriconazole? Well, clinicians generally have more experience with voriconazole, and direct costs may be more expensive as well with isavuconazole. So that's why generally at this time, most are probably going to choose voriconazole unless we've got a potential contraindication in invasive aspergillosis and things like that. So let's talk about pharmacokinetics a little bit. Half-life, very long, 130 hours. So that's important to note that, you know, maybe a missed dose or you miss, you know, the dose by a few hours or something. That's probably not going to be a crazy huge deal with isavuconazole versus other agents that have a much shorter half-life. High volume distribution, so generally good penetration into various parts of the body. And then oral to IV. Oral has a very high bioavailability. I believe it's something like high 90%. So essentially, bioavailability is equivalent to IV dosing there. So that's a good thing, an easy, simple thing to handle there. All right, let's take a quick break from our sponsor and we'll wrap up with drug interactions. If you're in the market for pharmacist board certification study material like BCPS, ambulatory care, geriatrics, NAPLEX, BCMTMS, psychiatric exam, go check out meded101.com/store, STORE. Your support there goes directly to support this podcast. If you're a clinician, a dietitian, physician, med student, PA student, nurse practitioner, we've got a growing list of resources on drug interactions, case studies, lots of different books on Amazon. All those links, meded101.com/store, STORE. All your purchases there go to help support this podcast. So books are a great gift for students and folks of that nature, really learning pharmacology and really learning the application of how we use that pharmacology knowledge. So again, go check out meded101.com/store. All right, wrapping up with drug interactions. CYP3A4 is a problem with pretty much all the azole antifungals. Isavuconazole is no different here. Okay, so CYP3A4 inducers, particularly strong CYP3A4 inducers, as well as strong CYP3A4 inhibitors, we're going to generally want to avoid isavuconazole, or we've got to change the CYP3A4 inducer or inhibitor. So, reminder, CYP3A4 inducer, they're going to reduce concentrations of isavuconazole. Strong CYP3A4 inducer examples include carbamazepine, rifampin, St. John's wort, phenytoin. CYP3A4 inhibitors are going to raise concentrations potentially of isavuconazole. So some strong CYP3A4 inhibitors, clarithromycin, some of the HIV medications, ritonavir, atazanavir, cobicistat, older antidepressant, nifazidone. I can't say I see it used real often in practice. Another CYP3A4 inhibitor there. So generally, we're going to avoid the use of isavuconazole in that situation. Or if we feel risk-benefit that we absolutely need a nasal antifungal, we feel we need isavuconazole, we're going to look to potentially change that CYP3A4 inducer or inhibitor. On the flip side, isavuconazole inhibits CYP3A4. Many, many drugs are impacted by CYP3A4 inhibitors. So colchicine concentrations, fentanyl, midazolam, rivaroxaban, apixaban. Also wanted to mention there is some P-glycoprotein activity as well from isavuconazole. So a drug like digoxin concentrations can go up because of that. So many, many drugs can be affected by CYP3A4 inhibitors like isavuconazole. Very, very important to remember that. Personally, if you're not comfortable with drug interactions and isavuconazole is being used, you definitely have to run a drug interaction screen, okay? Really, really important. Many, many drugs, like I said, can be affected by this. Isavuconazole and some of the azole antifungals, I typically always run a drug interaction screen, particularly if you got a patient on, you know, 5, 10, or more meds. Definitely much more important there, where we may overlook something in that situation. So again, if you see this drug, I would definitely run the drug interaction screen for sure. All right, with that said, that's going to wrap up the podcast for today. Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, leave a rating review on iTunes or wherever you're listening. Also, go to reallifepharmacology.com. Get your free 31-page PDF on the top 200 drugs. Definitely a no-brainer for you to have that, whether you're a PA or nursing student, med student, so on and so forth. Go check out and support the sponsor, meded101.com/store. Got books on nursing pharmacology, drug interactions, case studies, board certification exams for pharmacists. So go check out all those resources. Support the sponsor, meded101.com/store. If you got comments, suggestions, feel free to shoot me an email, mededucation101@gmail.com, or you can track me down on LinkedIn as well. Eric Christensen, PharmD, BCPS, BCGP. Thank you so much for listening, and I hope you have a great rest of your day.